Mr. Jerry Barnett, Rear 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Barnett?
In Cheadle, in Cheshire, which is not too far from here, the next county, in 1921, 3rd of April, 1921.
And what did your father do for a living?
My father was in the cotton trade. He was a finisher, which meant that he made burgundy and cloths like that out of cotton. He worked in a mill in which is now closed in Cheadle. And we were reasonably well off. We always had a car. And
how many were there in the family?
There were four of us, the parents and my sister, who is now living in Church Stretton, quite near. And in 1930, of course, in the cotton slump, the mill closed, and we moved, I moved at the age of 10, to Lancashire, to Leyland, where my father's machinery moved to, into a mill which was staying open, and we continued in there.
Which schools did you attend?
Well, I attended a primary school, obviously, in Cheadle. And when I was 10, I took the usual examinations, and I won a scholarship to a grammar school. In fact, and I won the scholarship. I could have gone to Manchester Grammar School, but we moved, of course, at the same time, and I went to what is known as Bowshaw's Grammar School in Leyland. It was a convenient time, educationally, to move, of course, 10 years ago, because I was moving schools anyway.
What type of an education did you get at Bowshaw?
Bowshaw's? Well, very good, really. It was an old established grammar school, which in just before I went there had moved into a brand new building. And I took Latin and, of course, the usual subjects. And my favourite subjects were art, of course, and sciences. So that I was keen on architecture being a mixture of art and science rather from an early age.
What about sport? Did you have any interest in sport?
Not a great deal. I was never a good sportsman. I didn't like cricket very much. I like it now on the television, but I enjoyed rugby.
Was there an OTC at the school?
No.
Were you in any of the boys' organisations, Scouts, Boys Brigade?
I was in the Cubs, but for some reason in Cheadle I was in the Cubs. But I never went into a Cubs for some reason which I can't recall, but I didn't go to the Cubs.
Did you have any particular interests or hobbies when you were young?
Well, not particularly. I always enjoyed walking, and still do a great deal. And my family used to, even from before I can remember, used to go camping in Derbyshire on the weekends. And then when I was older, my friends and I used to go hiking, as we called it, and in the Lake District camping, youth hosteling.
So, when you came to the end of your time at the grammar school, what were your plans or educational plans?
Well, I always wanted to be an architect. I can't remember being wanted to be anything else. So, when I took the school certificate, as they say, my mother particularly investigated for me what schools of architecture were available, and she discovered Liverpool School of Architecture, which of course in those days was a world famous school for the war. It was very well known, and I went there for an interview with Professor Budden and took some drawings, and he offered me what they called an office bursary, which meant that I worked in the school office on this bursary system, two in the school office and one in the school library as assistants for 3 years, and thereafter they went through the university free for fees. So I did that.
What age was that at?
That was, must have been in 1936 or 7.
So when you were 16 or
yes,
16-ish?
17, yes. I went into the office of the School of Arcade, which was great because we used to, for one of our jobs, for example, was to run the lantern at lectures, and which was marvellous because I went to all the lectures, you know, from 50 or downwards. The school was running and had a lantern. So I had a very good pre-university introduction course of 3 years of going to all the lectures. Marvellous.
What other duties did you have?
Well, we used to run in our programmes and ask the telephone and general office dog's bodies, you know.
Did they pay you at all?
Yes,
as well
we
as
were, yes, we had 10 shillings a week. Each. Yes, with after stoppages, it was about 8 and 9. But I lived at home, of course. We lived 30 miles away, so I travelled by train each day.
Now, were you aware, I mean, towards the end of your third year, or at the start of your third year, depending on when, the war arrived?
Yes, the war.
Were you aware, I mean, you were educated young chap,
yeah.
Well, did you follow international affairs? Were you aware that there was a possibility?
Yes, I think so. We listened to the radio, of course. And, yes, I remember the... well, I remember the parents' fear of another war coming, of course, and in that last year before 1939, you know, we were putting strips of paper on the windows and blackout curtains and so on. And there was the relief of the Chamberlain's visit to Berlin, you know, and there was a great deal of fear, of course, because so many people had been through the First World War.
Was your parents' fear based on their experiences in the First World War, do they?
Yes, they were frightened of it happening again.
Your father had been in...
My father had been briefly in the infantry in the First War, but he didn't go into the army until sometime in 1918. So his experience was short, but bloody. And
were you aware of the actual nature of fascism and what, you know, the world politics that were going on at the time, or was it?
It's hard to separate what I knew then from what I know now. I don't think I was terribly interested now, to be truthful.
So
I can vividly remember the announcement at 11 o'clock on the 3rd of September.
What were you doing? Do you remember?
We were at home, of course, listening to the radio. And everybody, I think, in the room, myself included, strangely enough, I can remember feeling going a bit pale, as it were, under the skin and thinking, oh Lord, you know, it's not a war, because the feeling about the First War was very strong in families in those days. And they talked about rationing and the casualties, of course, after the war, so that, and it was in things like Boy's Old Paper, and that was our experience of the war, a bit heroic, but we're still aware of the frightening aspects of war.
So, did the war have any immediate impact? You'd be just transferring, wouldn't you, from being an office worker into
yes.
being a student?
Well, the impact was even before the declaration of war. The only the physical impact was in the on the school staff. We did actually spend a lot of time filling sandbags and helping to shore up the basement of the school as an air raid shelter. So it was constructive air raid precautions that I was involved in before war actually broke out.
Where was the, I didn't mention it, the actual architecture building then?
Yes, it's in Abercrombie Square. You were presumably in the Victoria Building, were you?
No, the history section were in Abercrombie Square
in
as
London.
Well.
Oh yes, well it was on the corner of the corner, the first corner as you came into it, up the hill of Mount Pleasant. The first building was the School of Architecture, and the second house was Civic Design. And because it had cellars, and we shored them up with timbers and built sandbag protective, protective walls outside. There was actually a bomb did fall during the Blitz between the tram lines in front of the front door. The tram lines curved upwards, up in the road, and it just blew a coping stone off the parapet. We sailed through the air and came down through the skylights in the roof of the studios and broke a drawing board. that was about the extent of the damage except for broken window.
So by then you were now a student, were you?
I was then a student, yes, as war broke out more or less.
That would be your first year, would it?
Yes.
And what was life like?
Sorry, I must correct that. It must have been in 1940.
So, for the first year, you were still working in the office?
Yes.
So how did the war affect you then, Joe?
Not at all, really, until the Blitz started on Liverpool, of course. That was when it... and by that time, that must be over 1940, wasn't it, I think. Anyway, I was in the SDC, as they called it, the training corps then. I was a student.
What did STC stand for?
Senior Training Corps.
Now,
there was an ATC in the university before the war, you see.
Had you been in that?
No.
So what the Senior Training Corps, what activities did you do with that?
Well, we did military training for, I think, it was half a day. I don't think it was a full day. Half a day a week. The officers running it had a house just down the street, Bedford Street it was, that's right. And we trained at the rifle ranges. There were rifle ranges at Birkdale. And we did obviously ordinary military training in the university campus somewhere. I can't remember where now.
What was the scope of that training then? I mean, if you could run through it.
Firing practice and some maneuvers, a lot of troops. They're practical exercises without troops. And each vacation we stayed, pardon me, in university hostels to do full time training. So that I remember. I think it must have been, it was in the Easter vacation of 1942. I can fix that because I know I was on sentry duty on a wet, dark night, April of course it was, outside Derby Hall in Liverpool on my 21st birthday. That's how I spent it. So we were at the, that's near a park, you see, so we'd use the park presumably. I can't remember the training very much.
How realistic or detailed was the training at the time, do you think, judging by what you got later on?
Not desperately good, I wouldn't have thought. Some of the officers, of course, had experience in the First War and weren't very old then, but it was a bit of a lark, I suppose you'd call it. I mean, we went to Aberystwyth, no, to Harlech, there's a university college at Harlech. In the summer holiday of 42, very hot summer it was, I remember. We had a fortnight there, and I can mostly remember the food, which was very good. I can't remember much of the training except going up on the mountains, probably, you know. I was a bit confused because I did my real military training at Barmouth later on, and the two terrains are the same.
So you were getting, were you being trained as possible officers in the future?
Oh, yes. Don't think there's any doubt about that. I was also in the Home Guard at the time, at Leyland, you see.
I'll come back to the Home Guard. Who was running the show? Which Was the STC attached to any particular regiment?
Yes, it was attached to the Liverpool regiment.
And it didn't have any, no particular battalion, just the regiment generally.
I think not. No, I can't recall anything like that. I don't know now whether the officers were regular. I don't think they were regular officers from the local regiment. I think they were probably staff at the university who had no experience.
So. That's one side of you. Now, the Home Guard, when did you join the Home Guard?
I don't know. Can't remember that. It was concurrent, anyway. And I used the same uniform in both outfits.
And what sort of training and activities did you do with the Home Guard? What was the actual name of the unit as well? Did it have a...
The Home Guard? Yes, the Home Guard was attached... So the Loyals, wasn't it, which is the Lancashire regiment?
And did it have a name, or was it just the Leyland Home Guard?
Well, it was a platoon, but what the formation was above that, I have no idea. And we used to just do night duties at a building which was occupied somewhere out on the Moss near Leyland, what they call the Moss, which is the flat area. It was a building occupied by monks of some sort who inhabit. And I can remember they had a wonderful kitchen with a lava cooker about 20 feet long in which we used to warm our pies, you see, to the evening meal. And a section of the Home Guard used to be there just for the night. It had a watchtower in this building, which was useful. You could see quite a long way if the night was clear. And we were just there thinking we were looking for parachutists, but that was what it amounted to. I think we had two rifles. One was an American rifle, and the other was a Browning automatic rifle.
Was there much actual training with them?
I can't recall any training whatsoever. There must have been some, yes. But I really, because I was in the SDUC as well, I was a Lance Corporal.
What about the background, the types in the Home Guard? Were they a mixture of young and old, or?
They seemed to be mostly, in my eyes, of middle age. I suppose they were in their 30s. Probably chaps at the motorworks who were exempted from military service, because, of course, the Leyland Motorworks is the biggest employer there. Or for whatever reason, I never knew. And... one or two had seen service in the First War, so they were of middle age rather than young.
And
probably the youngest.
Was it a competent Home Guard unit, or was it?
Well, I couldn't call it competent, no, because it was ill-armed, ill-briefed. It didn't know really what it was waiting for, other than possible invasion by airborne forces, which. I really don't think it could have done anything, except give a warning.
Now, what about the Liverpool Blitz? It hadn't affected Abercrombie Square much, as you said, but
no.
What about your experiences during the worst time of the Blitz? Because you'd be in Liverpool or
yes,
thereabouts.
I wasn't living there at night, so I didn't actually experience the Blitz in terms of bombs.
Did they not attempt to bomb Leyland at all?
A bit. But not very much. They did make one day that raid when I was having a lunch one day. It must have been during the vacation or weekend, I can't remember. And there was a bomb dropped on what they called the tank shop at Leyland. But there was only one or two casualties. We did get air raid warnings and distant bombs at night. We were sometimes spending nights under the stairs.
You didn't have a shelter then?
No. No, it wasn't. The bombing in Leyland was not serious.
But how about the Liverpool?
Well, that was, of course, very dramatic indeed. And I used to go in every morning during the worst period of the Blitz. And being in the SDC, we were used to look for bodies or missing persons in piles of rubble. we were organised by somebody, the ARP organisation, presumably, and sent off in lorries in various parts of Liverpool to look for bodies. I was very happy to say I never found one.
Did you have any tools, or how did they go about it?
No, it was mostly were indexed by hand, you know, and just if someone, the terrace houses used to, when they were hit, used to pretty well crumble to loose bricks, really, and timbers, and relatives might have not found, a relative because they thought they might be still in the rubble somewhere, and so we were looking for them.
Did people in your party find bodies, or was it just you?
No, I was never aware of bodies being found. We were just looking. And then each morning, I came in by train each morning. Very often the line was damaged, and the train would wait just outside Liverpool for an hour or more before it could slowly move in again. Dock area, of course, was particularly bad, and walking up to the school, you're familiar with that route up from Exchange Station. We used to take a tram when they were running, of course, but there were very often, it was a long way round to get to Abercrombie Square because of roads closed with bombs and shaky buildings and so on.
What was the, you were sort of there but not there. What was quite a good position to judge the morale of the people? Because, you weren't that much involved in it yourself. How did the people of Liverpool seem to be taking such a hammering?
Well, I never saw any signs of actual morale distress. In fact, there were more jokes than dismay, in a way. I always remember going in once and there was a sailor in the compartment who wasn't a car in the train, and we were standing there in the countryside outside the Liverpool for an hour, waiting for it to start again, and he was leaning through the window, and there was one of those notices, don't beware of the trains, because it was a little footpath crossing the road, and he says, of course using the naval expression, there's no fucking calm in this one. But say, with that sort of humour, really, rather than anything else, there was there was obviously must have been distress in families who had losses.
But there were no signs of panic or looting?
Not at all. No, nothing like that. And I used to leave my bicycle at the station in the country, of course, to catch the train. It stood there all day with its lamp and pump on, and they never thought that anyone would touch it, and they didn't, of course.
Now, when you started being a student in 1940, and then you were actually a student 40 to 42, I think, so that you could do your second year exams. Now, could you just explain how that had come about? Because
yes, well, I must have been due. I can't remember the details, but I must have been due for a call-up. There was a regular call-up at ages, of course. And I must have been due, I suppose, about my 22nd birthday, would it be? Yes. No, 21st birthday. And we were all much of an age in the school at that time. There were then only about 20 of us in each year at school, a 5-year course, 6 years in fact, because of a year end. And we would have naturally, and most of us were in the STC, of being architects, would have gone into the engineers, become sappers. But they did a dirty deed in a way, which on reflection we were all terribly able to support in those days, and very naive. They said, we were told, presumably this came from the War Office, that if we volunteered for the infantry instead of going into the engineers, they'd allow us to stay on to take our second year exams in June. and we fell for it. So we were then enlisted. We were given our shilling and enlisted in the Royal Fusiliers early in 1942.
As other ranks?
Yes, Fusiliers as well. We stayed at the university and took our...
Were you under military discipline at all, or were you just nominally in the Royal Fusiliers?
We just had to fill that with all. I think we wore the badge and our caps, changed our badges from the Liverpool Regiment to the Royal Fusiliers.
Now, you said you fell for it.
Yes.
In the sense, why would it have been better to have been, why did you want to be in the Royal Engineers, or why would it have been better had you been?
Well, it would have been much better, been a lot safer to start with. And the training would have obviously had a constructional bias, and the experience would have been invaluable to us in our profession rather than the infantry, which was the opposite. So, but we, because we, none of us knew how long the war would last, and we put great stress in those days on getting through the exams at the end of the year, because thinking of coming back, of course, and having cleared 2 years,
you didn't want
to do second year again. So we agreed, and we all went into the infantry. In June, therefore, we took our exams and then immediately got telegrams to report to Oxford.
So they were at least not putting you into OCTU. Now, you went to the OCTU, your first, that was at Barmouth, sorry.
Yeah, well, actually, what happened was I went to Dunbar, in fact. There were pre-OCTU training units, and I can't remember their name now. But we didn't go to those, we went straight into OCTU because of our SPC training, and I went up to Dunbar, where I had lunch and then had another telegram handed to me at the OCTU to say it was a wrong posting and I was to go back home again, which I did, and then for about a fortnight, and then I got a posting to Barmouth.
Fair journey to go just for...
It was a happy journey back there, I can tell you. I mean, you're all nicely straight away.
So you got to Barmouth. That was round about late June, I suppose, 42 then.
Yeah.
And
it had a number there, 266 or something comes to mind. I might be wrong. Like.
We can look it up, or they can look it up. And could you take me through a little bit about what life was like at Barmouth?
Yes, I remember it fairly well. I can even remember the first evening there. The cooks, we were put into hotels and billets, which had been taken over by the army. And I can remember having a jumbo sausage and a piece of bread when I arrived late in the evening. And we had a training which was very tough at first. It was obviously meant to sort out, you know, the boys from the women, men of hers, or whatever you call it.
How did this start you then? What was the tough side at the start?
What was what?
What were they doing that was tough?
Well, they were stressing her. They would, for example, you had different dress for different training exercises. You might be in PT kit and then in full marching order for another exercise. And they would give you 10 minutes change when you were about a mile and a half away from the billet, that sort of thing. So you had to run everywhere, full belt. In fact, that's reminded me, yes, for the first month, you were never allowed to walk anywhere. You had to move at a double. So that I found it, of course, I don't suppose I was fit. as I might have been, but I found it quite stressful in the first month. I didn't like it.
What other sorts of things would they do in that first month?
Well, it was a lot of there was a lot of physical training of running up Cadaridis in full kit, you know, and doing a bayonet charge at the top and swimming with full kit through the tidal pools and the bridge and so on. And night exercises on Pegler 4 were a particular.
What would you do on one of those?
We'd try and find our way in groups in the dark, really, is what it amounted to, and do mock attacks on things, crossing ditches and dikes and hedges in the dark and trying to find our way. That was, I think, good training in retrospect, because one of the things that happens in action is most of your work is done at night. And I think if I was training troops now, I would give them a lot of night movement in small parties, finding their way at night and moving at night. I think it's terribly important.
It sounds like the night exercises and indeed the first month were more physical and movement orientated rather than tactical oriented.
They were.
So yeah. they weren't tactical problems.
No.
They were just geographical and physical problems.
That's right. And a lot of square bashing.
How did you take to square bashing? I mean, you'd done it with these.
Well, we liked it.
What did you like about it?
We liked the. It's hard to describe what it is. It's the movement in a body of united men moving together. And it's even more fun, as we did, of course, a lot, is controlling, because we were being trained as officers, of course, we had to do a lot of the drilling orders ourselves. We would take a squad, you see, and drill them.
Was the squad other cadets, or would you have a squad from...
No, we never had any troops. Only ourselves. And we got, even in the SCC, we liked it. And we used to like to learn new complicated drills. It was great fun, moving in a body in unison. And I found it always fascinating to be able to control, say, a company of three platoons on a barrack square with your voice and get them to go and move where you want them to. It's a lovely business.
Besides the personal satisfaction, did you think it had a valid military purpose?
Oh, yes, I'm sure of that, because in stressful circumstances, people, when all their instincts are telling them to turn around and go home, need some instinctive obedience to move to a pattern. Obviously you don't move like that on the battlefield now, but the automatic movement to a shouted order is absolutely vital.
Now, so the first month you had, you know, geographical, you know, physical training, drill.
Yeah.
Were you doing anything else during the first month?
We had tactical exercises, you know, and classroom.
Were these tute ones again?
Yes.
And what sort of things were they, what sort of tactics were they trying to get through to you? And what era were they based on? Were they modern, or were they First World War, or Boer War? What sort of tactics were they?
No, they were modern, in that the basic difference was in really in the defensive formation on the ground, in that you didn't have lines of trenches, you had platoon and company patterns of defence and depth, you see, with a lot more depending on the fire from weapons and on the men on the ground, as you might say. I think that was the basic difference, which was worked out in practice, of course.
What about attack training?
Yes, we had attack training. What I found we never had was retreat training. We didn't know how to retreat, which was perhaps fortunate, because we'd only one thing to know, was only the one thing we knew how to do, and that was to attack. But
what format? What methods of attack were they? Did they use mainly? Were there any tactical principles that were dinned into you about
attack? Again, tactical principles were, the basic tactical principle was that you move as a platoon, for example, which was, you know, the basic unit, that one or two sections, being three sections in the platoon, would move while the third section gave covering fire. That was the basic principle.
And did you do the tutes out in the open or on the sand tables and things?
We did both. Oh, are we starting now? Yes, we did both. Sand table tutes were the most common pole, but it's more difficult on an open landscape, really, to manage those things. What we didn't do, I realized in exercises and schools of infantry after the war was over, what we could have done was during the war, which we didn't get, and that was large-scale experience of covering fire from artillery and mortars and that sort of thing, which is, of course, very difficult to simulate and very expensive to put on. And we got it after the war when there was plenty of ammunition to use up, but not before it.
Did you have any live ammunition exercises, you know, where troops fired over your head?
No, not really. No, we didn't get that. And that was a great shame because that's so dominant, of course, really.
So that was the first month. What were your living conditions while you were going through this? What
was
your
good. We were in hotel rooms in barrack beds, of course. The hotels had been stripped of furniture, and there were barracks. The bar, I remember, we were in a hotel called the Costa Ghetto, which is still there in Bournemouth. And the bar was still open at the bottom because it had to keep its license running. But it was a posh hotel, and the bar was still posh. I really didn't like these soldiers coming in muddy and wet uniforms, which was denim in those days, of course, for training and drinking. And so we weren't really terribly welcome, but when you'd been on a long forced march, you were really dying for a pint of beer, and it cost me, I remember, just a day's pay to have a pint of shandy. Three bob. Just the whole day's pay.
Was it not anywhere cheaper you could have?
Yes, there was, but you had to walk, you know, that was at the bottom of the billet. And you were rather tired. But it didn't matter anyway.
How did you get on with your fellow cadets?
Oh, very well, always. That's one of the course joys of the army, is the strong friendships you make. It was always, always friends.
Were you with any of the people
strangely enough, that occurred to me quite recently, and I never thought why at the time. I do know that group of us, there were about 10 of us in the SDC, one of them went to off to an Isle of Man and was drowned in the sea. I don't know where the others went. One of them, a chap called Walton, Tony Walton, did get into the engineers. He must have done a clever wangle. He got a transfer. Another one, Tom Foulkes, who was a particular friend. Not Tom Foulkes, Tom Guthrie. Foulkes was another one. Tom Guthrie went into the 6th of the 1st Airborne in the end and dropped it on him. I met him at Liverpool again after the war. But no, they didn't go to the same country.
Were they from similar backgrounds to you, overall?
Yes.
Grammar school, college?
Yes, pretty well the same. Yeah. Mm.